Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, this is Peter Paul Brazella. I don't know what's happened to our theme, but anyway, it's a rainy day in San Francisco. Mr. O is in town. There are protesters out there, and a hard rain's going to fall. Interesting day today. I still have this bloody cold, but we're still carrying on. One of the big questions facing the government is our government is habeas corpus. And in 1861, John Merriman was one of the first people arrested under the suspension of habeas corpus. This was Abe Lincoln's presidency. And the U.S. Supreme Court got involved and overturned this violation of Mr. Merriman's rights. I don't have all the details. Also, other Supreme Court or SCOTUS decisions today. In 1959, the Supreme Court, this was before the Warren Court, incidentally, it was Fred Vinson, who was, no, wait a minute, no, it was Warren, excuse me, Earl Warren, former governor of California. There were black and white, there was a prohibition in Los Angeles for blacks to be fighting whites in the ring, and the Supreme Court ruled that this ban and prohibition was illegal, unconstitutional. Also, in 1964, I think it was, during desegregation controversies in the South and elsewhere in the country, schools were being closed to avoid, public schools were being closed to avoid, to desegregate them. And so the U.S. Supreme Court of SCOTUS ruled that that was unconstitutional and that was illegal. So he couldn't close the schools. And let's see what else happened today. In media, in 1854, the first news telegraph dispatch was published in the Baltimore Patriot. I don't think it was what we would consider right of center or right newspapers today. Also in 1948, San Francisco and media received the first telecast. Today, the because Mr. O is in town at the Fairmont trying to prop up Senator Barbara Boxer so she can be elected, reelected for a fourth term. She's had three too many anyway. And all the media is out there in front of the Fairmont with some protesters. We didn't have time to look at all of them, so I had to get back and do the show. Excuse me. So have that little problem. And then the Irish terrorists in 1870, the Fenians, which was a terrorist group protesting the British occupation of Ireland, they had a raid up in Quebec, Eccles Hill, I believe it was. And then we have our, then in 1914, the British decided to get smart. And, of course, this was during World War One at the beginning. The British House of Commons passed a home rule for Ireland, but it took the Easter Rebellion and a lot of other internal controversies and protests for Britain finally to give at least the Republic of Ireland their freedom. And then Ulster decided they wanted to remain Protestant. And let's see what else today. Sex scandals. We have two of them today. In 1895, Oscar Wilde was sentenced to 2 years in prison. Reading Jail, a famous poem, by the way, for sodomy. And that was, even though it was quite prevalent among certain English classes, and there was a notorious house in, or street in London called Cleveland, and all kinds of kinky things went on there. Also, on this side of the ocean, Wilbur Mills, the prominent, powerful chairman, I think of Ways and Means, from Arkansas. He got caught with Fannie Fox, who was a stripper, or a woman of pleasure, let's put it that way. I think he was cavorting in the fountain, and he was drunk, and so that forced him out of office. And of course, we still have the sex scandals today with people like Barney Frank. The media is covering that up. And I don't know why he's still in Congress. And there's some others. People are beginning to learn that there is a litmus test that's being applied by the radical, the lavender left, for public officials, government appointees, and judges. And this has come up. The lavender left is saying that because they're keeping a low key on it, but they're pushing the latest Supreme Court nomination because the woman is reportedly lesbian and has a lesbian partner. And so that's what they want. And when people run for office, now we have an election coming up here in California, the radical gay, lesbian, prostitution papers make a point of pointing out whether or not the candidate is, quote, gay-friendly or gay, lesbian, NAMBLA. They don't talk about NAMBLA, but some of these people are pedophiles, and they've been caught. And, of course, now we have transgendered as the new litmus test. And people are wising up that it's not what is or isn't between their legs or what they wish was or wasn't. It's what's between their ears and what's in their heart and what's in their brain. And do they have ethics and are they competent? Nobody really cares about somebody's sexual preference. But since they're making an issue of it, people have to become aware that this is totally inappropriate, this is un-American, and what we need are ethical people, no matter, as long as they keep their sexual preference private and they're not molesting children, that should be the issue. They keep it private, and what they want to do behind closed doors with other consenting adults, and keep children out of it. They're not involved in prostitution or pornography or pedophilia or protecting it or promoting it, which has happened here in San Francisco. That shouldn't be an issue. But we're going to learn the hard way because the radical lavender left is very powerful, got a lot of money. They've intimidated a lot of people. They have influence in the media. And we'll get into these phony groups in an upcoming show. But the rest of America's got to realize what the agenda is. And that's become also an agenda in the state attorney general's race here in California, and I think in other races around the country, that the black woman who's DA of San Francisco has got some skeletons which are starting to rattle in her closet about corruption in the public, the U.S., the district attorney of San Francisco's office. That's a carryover from previous administrations, that there's a long history of public corruption in the district attorney office here in San Francisco. It dates back to the 1920s, and we'll get into that because it affects everybody in this state. Because people that are railroaded into state prison, the American taxpayer pays in many ways. And we brought this up before. Excuse me. And also today, since we're concerned about cost and the impact on people's lives and are there going to be jobs, in 1962, the AFL-CIO, which has now become rather anemic, they campaigned for a 35-hour week, which was what the French had in France. We don't have it, and of course people are lucky even to get 10 hours, given what's happened to our economy. Excuse me, it's still a little bit bloody cold. And so, and then the unions now don't represent, they've been taken over by the radicals, and they don't represent the interests of the rank and file. And we've seen what's happened with people like Saul Alinsky. Also today, excuse me, I hope to get over this bloody cold. For women's rights, in 1934, Jane Byrne was born. She was the first woman mayor of Chicago. And hasn't been a woman mayor since, but it's interesting. I remember in 1979, I think it was, the successor to the longtime mayor, Richard Daley I, was a guy named Michael Blandek, a Croatian ethnic, and he succeeded. He was president of the city council, and he succeeded Mayor Daley, who died, ironically, had a heart attack while on the toilet. Anyway, they had one of the worst snowstorms in history in that part of Illinois, and Blandick didn't have the snowplows out. He wasn't prepared to deal with the snow, and so Jane Byrne, who was director of consumer affairs with the city of Chicago, She made an issue of this, and she won by 15,000 votes, even with all the vote fraud. She had one term, and her husband, Jay McMahon, I think was his name, was a journalist, a reporter for the old Chicago Daily News, one of the great papers of Chicago, which unfortunately folded. And I don't know what he's doing today, but Jane Burns' first husband was an Air Force Navy pilot stationed at the Glenview Naval Air Station. He died in a plane crash, and they had a daughter. I don't know what she's doing today. Also, for people who are familiar with the American Kennel Club, the Westminster Show, who are dog lovers, who are animal lovers, who are concerned about animals and the environment, I did an interview with him, and I'll run it again. Roger Karras was born today. We call him the voice of dogdom. And let's see. And those of us who like music, who are concerned about the lack of great composers these days, at least producing music that's easy on the ears and not so intellectual that it's not appealing, Aram Khachaturian, and he's famous. He was Armenian, and he lived to about 77, I think. But anyway, his most famous piece of music was the Saber Dance, and it was even popularized. They even figured out a way for a dance band, and when I played in a dance band, that was one of the things that we played, and I think it was Percy Faith who made a popular arrangement that people could dance to, but they weren't dancing with our flashing sabers. And then also of the depths today, the great Duke Ellington, one of the great black musicians of all time in America, he died today, I think, of a heart attack. And of the other, and of the births today, this is interesting, or this day in history, George III, the Tea Party, it was different, the Boston Tea Party. Incidentally, I was told by Patrick Butler, who is one of our correspondents, that the Tea Party concept is different. There was a Tea Party movement started in Illinois to protest property taxes, and next time we have him on, we'll get into that. But the woman that started it is very, she's to the left of center, I understand her, and she's very unhappy that her protest movement, Tea Party, has been co-opted by what she sees and her supporters see as right of center opportunists. These things happen. And then in the French Revolution, Marat, he was born today. And in year 15, Big Julie, Julius Caesar, was born today. And among the other interesting deaths, part of the problem we have in foreign policy was with the John Foster Dulles, whose brother, Alan Dulles, was one of the first heads or connected to starting the Central Intelligence Agency. He was the OSS, our spy service director in Switzerland, and was trying to help people in Europe overturn the Nazis, and he was a very good spook, as they say. And John Foster Dulles was Presbyterian. His son became a Roman Catholic priest. He converted, and there was nothing that John Foster was a little annoyed about that, but there was nothing he could do. And then he taught at Georgetown University, I think, became a Jesuit of all things, and they're very political. And he became a cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church. I think he died last year. Dulles only had one son. And then one of the great British generals of World War II, Marshal Archibald Wavell, and he was one of the first generals that the British used, I think, in North Africa to try to stem the successes of Field Marshal Rommel. Then Wavell, I think, was transferred out to Burma, and he died today. And then, let's see, who else? I think that's about it for today. Excuse me. There's not many interesting things. Now, what people should be concerned about. We hear Hannity. We hear all these people, Morris, and all the people right of center, right, and who are concerned about vote fraud, talking about the Republican, the expected Republican sweep. Well, if already they're plotting and they're participating in vote fraud, one of the things that they're going to use, if they can get away with it, is this Election Day registration and voting. on registration and voting on the same day of election day in November. And of course, we've seen the fraud before. I've documented a lot of it. Go to my other webpage, Californians Against Voter Fraud, and we'll update as much as we can some of that. And there was vote fraud rampant throughout San Francisco, and also during the first race to Dianne Feinstein, the former mayor and presidential aspirant, governor aspirant, U.S. senator. There was about when she ran against Hutchinson, Huffington, the Texas oil heir who's divorced from Ariana, the Greek opportunist. She has the Huffington Post, which is so far left they make even the Greeks squeamish. Dianne ran against him, Huffington, who had a lot of money, and there was about 150,000. She won by 150,000 votes. A lot of those votes, if not all of them, were fraudulent. And a lot of this went on here in San Francisco. We had people not only voting from the cemetery, from parking lots, from we had one guy registered to vote and voted at the Bank of America, trumpet player. And when we called a check on and said, you know, this guy's registered to vote there, and the response was, that cat don't blow his horn here. And then Cecil Williams, who was an associate of Jim Jones, a black prominent left-wing politician minister who runs Glide Methodist Church, there were over 500 bogus voters registered there. So it went on, and it's still going on, and unless people become aware, no matter where you are here in the country, the radical left, they're going to hijack this election if we let them get away with it. So we'll be giving you tips on what to look for in your neighborhood, in your county, in your city, and in your state. And one thing that you've got to stop is this election day registration and voting. Because if anybody who's illegal or who's a fraudulent voter or who's been voting twice or doesn't live in the district that he or she is voting in, if they register on that day and vote that day, it's gone. They're gone. The vote's in, but you'll never get these people, and we don't have the resources to track down all this vote fraud. So you got to prevent it up front. So what you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you and steal your votes. So prepare for that. Now, another thing, and I speak from personal experience, case I know, all these illegals and these migrants who are driving vehicles, they don't have driver's license, they don't have insurance, and they often don't own the vehicle, which is in one case I'm familiar with, where serious injury, the medical bills are over $100,000, and of course his insurance company will pay for a lot of that, and they'll pay in the settlement. But anyway, the woman involved didn't. She had Mexican documentation, but no California documentation. She didn't own the car. She didn't have a license, and she didn't have insurance, obviously. And she tried to bribe her victim, and it's in the police report, so we'll put some of that up. But this is the problem we're having, and nobody's talking about that aspect of insurance, that what are people paying, the good drivers who have insurance, who pay their premiums, who keep their insurance, what are they paying, what are they subsidizing when there are medical bills from accidents involving illegal aliens and illegal migrants? And we had something really stupid, and they didn't correct it on PBS, which is taxpayer-funded. Keep that in mind. And McNeil Lair had it on, and they hadn't responded to this. It was produced by this phony group called the Center for Investigative Reporting, which is my experience with them when I was working in a paper. Went up to their office, and I was overwhelmed by the smell of marijuana. But anyway, they produced this report, and they focused on Sacramento, California, where the sheriff and the local police were stopping suspected drivers. They had a road stop, and everybody's being stopped to check for auto insurance, a verification of it, and documentation of it, and everybody has to carry that in California, whether you live here or you're visiting, and you get fined if you don't have that, and that's the law. Well, anyway, they found these people, and of course they were migrants, and they didn't arrest them for that, but what they did, if they didn't have insurance and didn't have a driver's license, the vehicle was towed. And so what one guy said, and he's on the tape, Well, okay, I'll go out and buy another one. I need it for my work. He's probably working illegally. But when he gets in an accident and all this effort that the Sacramento Sheriff's Department and the Police Department in the city of Sacramento had to put out to corral these vehicles and catch these non-licensed, non-insured, probably illegals who were driving, that's less people out there fighting crime and protecting the streets and protecting kids. Keep that in mind. You know, you pay in many different ways because of this attitude that anything goes, and if we don't like the law, we ignore it. We can't ignore it. We defy it. And this is what goes on increasingly throughout not only California but throughout the country. And you see it in your own cities, your own counties, your own state. The other thing is, among the great political frauds and fictions, recently, we didn't catch it last broadcast, but Walter Winchell, he had this gravelly voice, and he worked for the Hearst papers, and he was a racist. His family came, they were Russian Jewish. I don't know if he practiced, but he was, people mostly remember him because of the TV show in the 50s, late 50s, black and white, starring Robert Stack, called The Untouchables. Well, a lot of that was fiction. In fact, I know personally because I knew some of the people, they were getting ready for retirement when I worked in the federal building as a clerk. And there were some people, survivors of the Prohibition days and the prosecution of Al Capone. And Elliot Ness had very little to do with bringing down the Al Capone machine at that time or getting Al Capone tried and put away in Alcatraz. In fact, the man who did it was Elmer Erie, a little Jewish ethnic accountant from the Treasury Department. He got a hold of Al Capone's books, all of the liquor sales and the money that they were, the bribes and all that that the Al Capone machine was taking in, and they got Al Capone on income tax. And it was a very interesting trial. I met one of the survivors of that trial. And what had happened was the judge, federal judge in the case, got wind that the juries had been bribed. And this happened also in the John Gotti trial. So what they do in that case, if they find out ahead of time before trial, or even when a trial starts that the jury may have been tampered with, they will stop the trial or stop the proceedings, or in this case or in that case, they switch the juries. And this is what John Gotti pulled. His people brought when he was prosecuted for public corruption and racketeering, they found out, the U.S. attorney found out that the juries had been tampered with, the jury, excuse me, and they got the jury switched for the trial, and they convicted John Gotti, who later died of cancer in prison, and of course that's another interesting story. But the U.S. attorney who successfully prosecuted John Gotti said on CNN, I think it was, that this is the beginning of the end of the mafia in New York, Chicago, and they mentioned San Francisco. Well, you rarely hear about it, but apparently there is a mafia here. Those of you who like movies, I suggest you see the movie Bullet. Came out in 1968, interestingly, when about the time of the Democratic Convention, which was being held in Chicago. And, of course, those of you who know Steve McQueen, that great car race, and we'll get into that. It's very interesting how that car race occurred. It's not the way – it didn't occur the way it showed in the film. But they brought up the fact that there was a mafia in San Francisco. And Joe Alioto, who was mayor of San Francisco, he's dead now. Interesting guy. He played the violin. Only child in a Catholic Italian family. Interesting. And he's not related to the Aliotos, those of you who come to San Francisco, the Aliotos at Fisherman Wharf. They may be of the same clan, but not of the same family. Anyway, he wanted to be the vice presidential nominee on the Democratic ticket, and Humphrey was designated to be a presidential nominee and won that. Well, the word came out that Joe Alioto, there was an article in Look magazine that Joe Alioto was connected to the mafia. Well, Alioto, who was antitrust lawyer, he sued Look magazine and won. Put Look magazine out of business. There are rare copies of that article, and we'll publish the one we have, and we'll get into what really happened. But the fact is that the mafia don't go around stuffing bodies in trunks or torching putting people up on meat racks or giving people cement shoes or telling them that they're going to swim with the fishes. They're respectable in that movie, The Godfather, which our one of our recent mayors, who is allegedly connected to a certain underworld group, was in it. And they've gone respectable. They've taken that money and invested it in real estate and the legitimate businesses, which are actually funded with illegitimate money. But that's the way it is. But we'll get into more of that because it's a fascinating story. But Walter Winchell, what really has annoyed me about him, and very angry, another case which I was involved in was that of Tokyo Rose or Rose D'Aquino. Now, she was born in Los Angeles of a first generation. Her family, in those days, the Japanese kids who were born here, the families who had come, who had emigrated legally to America, to Hawaii, they would send the kids back to Japan if they could afford it, or try to send them back to get to immerse them in the culture. Well, she was 20, and she was sent back to Japan, and of course Pearl Harbor happened, and so the Japanese government, Tojo's people, rounded up all the foreigners who were they were the belligerents, as far as they were concerned. And the girls were told, there were about 20 of them, who spoke good English, were told, you will broadcast or put you in a concentration camp or kill you. So she didn't know what to do, and she didn't have help from the American embassy. Incidentally, when these things happen, what happens is that the embassies are closed, there's an armed guard put around them, and they negotiate a transfer of diplomatic personnel. And in that case, the American ambassador, I think, was Joseph Grew, and he warned that we were going to be attacked. They put all the embassy personnel on a ship and exchanged them for the Japanese embassy people and diplomats here in America. So that's how that works. You don't hear too much about that. But anyway, she was just one of the many broadcasters that she had, and there was an Australian. And so when the Americans, so they were beating the drums, like Walter Winchell, a horrible man, was saying, this Tokyo Rose, she's a traitor, and she, you know, we've got, when we win the war, we've got to prosecute her and all that. Well, it turns out that she was forced, she was coerced to do that. She didn't do it voluntarily, like Axis Sally, an English woman who, oh no, she, I think she was an American, no, may have been an American, we'll get into that another time, but she broadcast voluntarily for the Nazis, and there was an Englishman known as Lord Haha. And when the British won and they captured him, he was tried and hanged for treason. But anyway, when the Americans landed in after the Japanese signed the surrender on the USS Missouri, they were all looking for Tokyo Rose, and they thought it was one woman. Well, she was the only one at the radio station at that time, and so she was fingered. Well, U.S. Justice Department had qualms about prosecuting her because there were a lot of questions whether she was coerced, prisoner of war, all of that. But the Hearst papers, to their internal shame and disgrace, and Walter Winchell kept beating the drums that she's got to be prosecuted and sent to prison as a traitor. And even though the Justice Department didn't want to, didn't have enough evidence, they felt, they were cajoled by Walter Winchell and the corrupt media. And so the rule is, at that time, was when an American commits treason against the country, they are brought back, if they're apprehended, to the nearest jurisdiction, which would have been Hawaii. Well, in this case, they felt the Japanese who lived in Hawaii, who were Americans, she would get a sympathetic jury. So instead, they brought her to San Francisco, where she was railroaded. So we'll get into that, because it's a fascinating story. I was involved at the tail end of it. And I met her many years later after she got out of prison. Rose Gurry was her name. And she died recently, and we'll get into that. And to the everlasting shame of people like Walter Winchell, who was a fraud. But we see this fiction in the media all the time, and we call them, some people call them media fakers. I call them morons, because they damage people's lives and they don't recant. Reform their ways, and people pay for it, and you pay for it if they, these people are railroaded into prison like Steve Neary. But anyway, tune in Thursday, and we shall end right now with what's appropriate for Mr. O, who's in town.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got a
got too much on my mind to play poker. King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
This is Peter Valbrizola. Thank you for listening, and we'll have more interesting stuff. Tune in Thursday at the usual time.